to be in Ardmore, Oklahoma. You went all the way to Oklahoma to see a show? That's what I'd saved up to do, and I meant to do it. Did you see the show in Ardmore? No, they never showed up there neither. Blevins hauled up one leg of his overalls and turned his leg to the firelight. Yonder's where that son of a bitch bit me, he said. I'd have soon been bit by an alligator. What made you set out for Mexico? Said Rollins.
Same reason as you.
What reason is that? 'Cause you know they'd play hell-sewed notes finding your ass down here. Ain't nobody hunting me. Blevins rolled down the leg of his overalls and poked at the fire with a stick. I told that son of a bitch I wouldn't take a whipping off of him, and I didn't. Your daddy?
My daddy never come back from the war.
Your stepdaddy?
Yeah.
Rollins leaned forward and spat into the fire. You didn't shoot him, did you?
I would have. He knowed it, too.
What was a bulldog doing in a bowling alley?
I didn't get bit in the bowling alley. I was working in the bowling alley, that's all.
Well, what were you doing that you got dog bit?
Nothing. I wasn't doing nothing.
Rollins leaned and spat into the fire.
Where were you at the time?
You got an awful lot of goddamn questions. And don't be spitting in the fire where I got supper cooking.
What?
Said Rollins. I said, don't be spitting in the fire where I got supper cooking. Rollins looked at John Grady. John Grady had started to laugh. He looked at Blevins.
Supper? He said. You'll think supper when you try to eat that stringy son of a bitch.
Blevins nodded. You let me know if you don't want your share, he said. What they dredged smoking out of the ground looked like some desiccated effigy from a tomb. Blevins put it on a flat rock and peeled away the hide and scraped the meat off the bones into their plates, and they soaked it down with hot sauce and rolled it in the last of the tortillas. They chewed and watched one another.
Well, said Rollins, it ain't all that bad.
No, it ain't, said Blevins.
Truth is, I didn't know you could eat one at all.
John Grady stopped chewing and looked at them. Then he went on chewing again.
You all been out here longer than me, he said. I thought we all started together.
The following day on the track south, they began to encounter small, ragged caravans of migrant traders headed toward the northern border. Brown and weathered men with burros 3 or 4 in tandem, a totter with loads of candelilla or furs or goat hides or coils of handmade rope fashioned out of lechuguilla or the fermented drink called sotol, decanted into drums and cans and strapped onto pack frames made from tree limbs. They carried water in the skins of hogs or in canvas bags made waterproof with candelilla wax and fitted with cowhorn spigots, and some had women and children with them, and they would shoulder the pack animals off into the brush and relinquish the road to the caballeros, and the riders would wish them a good day, and they would smile and nod until they passed. They tried to buy water from the caravans, but they had no coin among them small enough with which to do so. When Rollins offered a man 50 centavos for the half penny's worth of water it would take to fill their canteens, the man would have no part of it. By evening they bought a canteen full of sotol and were passing it back and forth among themselves as they rode, and soon they were quite drunk. Rollins drank and swung up the cap by its thong and screwed it down and took the canteen by its strap and turned to swing it to Blevins. Then he caught it back. Blevins' horse was plodding along behind with an empty saddle. Rollins eyed the animal stupidly and pulled his horse up and called to John Grady, riding ahead. John Grady turned and sat, looking.
Where's he at?
Who knows?
Laying back yonder somewheres, I reckon.
They rode back, Rollins leading the riderless horse by the bridle reins. Blevins was sitting in the middle of the road. He still had his hat on.
"Whew," he said when he saw them. "I'm drunker than shit."
They sat their horses and looked down at him.
"Can you ride or not?"
said Rollins.
"Does a bear shit in the woods? Hell yes, I can ride. I was riding when I fell off."
He stood uncertainly and peered about. He reeled past them and felt his way among the horses. Flank and flew, Rollins' knee.
"Thought you all done rode off and left me," he said.
Next time we will leave your skinny ass.
John Grady reached and took the reins and held the horse while Blevins lurched aboard.
Let me have them reins, said Blevins. I'm a goddamn buckaroo's what I am.
John Grady shook his head. Blevins dropped the reins and reached to get them and almost slid off down the horse's shoulder. He saved himself and sat up with the reins and pulled the horse around sharply.
Certified goddamn bronc peeler, what I mean, he said.
He dug his heels in under the horse, and it squatted and went forward, and Blevins fell backwards into the road. Rollins spat in disgust.
Just leave the son of a bitch lay there, he said. Get on the goddamn horse, said John Grady, and quit assing around.
By early evening, all the sky to the north had darkened, and the spare terrain they trod had turned a neuter gray as far as I could see. They grouped in the road at the top of a rise and looked back. The storm front towered above them, and the wind was cool on their sweating faces. They slumped bleary-eyed in their saddles and looked at one another. Shrouded in the black thunderheads, the distant lightning glowed mutely like welding seen through foundry smoke, as if repairs were underway at some flawed place in the iron dark of the world.
"It's fixing to come a good," said Rollins. "I can't be out in this," said Blevins.
Rollins laughed and shook his head.
"Listen at this," he said.
"Where do you think you're going to go?" said John Grady.
"I don't know, but I got to get somewheres."
"Why can't you be out in it?"
"On account of the lightning."
"Lightning?"
"Yeah." "Damn if you don't look about halfway sober all of a sudden," said Rollins.
"You afraid of lightning?" said John Grady.
"I'll be struck, sure as a world."
Rollins nodded at the canteen hung by its strap from the pommel of John Grady's saddle.
"Don't give no more of that shit. He's coming down with the DTs."
"It runs in the family," said Blevins. "My granddaddy was killed in a mine bucket in West Virginia. It run down in the hole 180 feet to get him. Couldn't even wait for him to get to the top. They had to wet down the bucket to cool it before they could get him out of it, him and two other men, and fried him like bacon. My daddy's older brother was blowed out of a derrick in the Batson field in the year 1904. Cable rig with a wood derrick, but the lightning got him anyways, and him not 19 year old. Great uncle on my mother's side, I said, got killed on a horse, and it never singed a hair on that horse, and it killed him graveyard dead. They had to cut his belt off him where it welded the buckle shut. And I got a cousin, 8 but 4 years older than me, was struck down in his old yard coming from the barn, and it paralyzed him all down one side and melted the fillings in his teeth and soldered his jaw shut."
"I told you," said Rollins, "he's gone completely dipshit."
"They didn't know what was wrong with him. He'd just twitch and mumble and point at his mouth like."
"That's an out-and-out liar. I never heard one," said Rollins.
Blevins didn't hear. Beads of sweat stood on his forehead.
"Another cousin on my daddy's side, it got him, it set his hair on fire. The change in his pocket burned through and fell out on the ground and set the grass alight. I done been struck twice. How come me to be deaf in this one ear? I'm double bred for death by fire. You got to get away from anything metal at all. You don't know what'll get you. Brad's in your overalls, nails in your boots."
"Well, what do you intend to do?"
He looked wildly toward the north.
"Try not ride it," he said. "Only chance I got."
Rollins looked at John Grady. He leaned and spat.
"Well," he said, "if there's any doubt before, I guess that ought to clear it up."
"You can't outride a thunderstorm," said John Grady. "What the hell is wrong with you?"
"It's the only chance I got."
He no sooner said it than the first thin crack of thunder reached them, no louder than a dry stick trot on. Blevins took off his hat and passed the sleeve of his shirt across his forehead and doubled the reins in his fist and took one last desperate look behind him and whacked the horse across the rump with the hat. They watched him go. He tried to get his hat on and then lost it. It rolled in the road. He went on with his elbows flapping, and he grew small on the plain before them and more ludicrous yet.
"I ain't taking no responsibility for him," said Rollins.
He reached and unhooked the canteen from John Grady's saddle horn and put his horse forward.
"He'll be a-laying in the road down here, and where do you reckon that horse'll be?"
They rode on, drinking and talking to himself.
I'll tell you where that horse will be, he called back.
John Grady followed. Dust blew from under the tread of the horses and twisted away down the road before them.
Run plumb out of the country, called Rollins. That's where. Gone to hell come Friday, that's where the goddamn horse will be.
They rode on. There were spits of rain in the wind. Blevins' hat lay in the road, and Rollins tried to ride his horse over it, but the horse stepped around it. John Grady slid one boot out of the stirrup and leaned down and picked up the hat without dismounting. They could hear the rain coming down the road behind them like some phantom migration. Blevins' horse was standing, saddled, by the side of the road, tied to a clump of willows. Rollins turned and sat his horse in the rain and looked at John Grady. John Grady rode through the willows and down the arroyo, following the occasional bare footprint in the rain-spotted loam, until he came upon Blevins crouched under the roots of a dead cottonwood in a cave-out where the arroyo turned and fanned out onto the plain. He was naked, save for an outsized pair of stained undershorts.
"What the hell are you doing?"
said John Grady. Blevins sat, gripping his thin white shoulders in either hand.
"Just sitting here," he said.
John Grady looked out over the plain where the last remnants of sunlight were being driven toward the low hills to the south. He leaned and dropped Blevins' hat at his feet.
"Where's your clothes at?"
"I took 'em off."
"I know that. Where are they?"
"I left 'em up yonder. Shirt had brass snaps, too."
"If this rain hits hard, there'll be a river come down through here like a train. You thought about that?"
"You ain't never been struck by lightning," said Blevins. "You don't know what it's like."
"You get drowned sitting there."
"That's all right. I ain't never been drowned before."
"You aim to just sit there."
"That's what I aim to do."
John Grady put his hands on his knees.
"Well," he said, "I'll say no more."
A long, rolling crack of thunder went pealing down the sky to the north. The ground shuddered. Blevins put his arms up over his head, and John Grady turned the horse and rode back up the arroyo. Great pellets of rain were cratering the wet sand underfoot. He looked back once at Blevins. Blevins sat as before, a thing all but inexplicable in that landscape.
"Where's he at?" said Rollins.
"He's just sitting out there. You better get your slicker."
"I knowed when I first seen him the son of a bitch had a loose wing net," said Rollins. "It was red all over him."
The rain was coming down in sheets. Blevins' horse stood in the downpour like the ghost of a horse. They left the road and followed the wash up toward a stand of trees and took shelter under the barest overhang of rock, sitting with their knees stuck out into the rain and holding the standing horses by the bridle reins. The horses stepped and shook their heads, and the lightning cracked, and the wind tore through the acacia and palo verde, and the rain went slashing down the country. They heard a horse running somewhere out in the rain, and then they just heard the rain.
"You know what that was, don't you?" said Rollins.
"Yeah."
"You want a drink of this?"
"I don't think so. I think it's beginning to make me feel bad."
Rollins nodded and drank.
"Think it is me, too," he said.
By dark, the storm had slacked and the rain had almost ceased. They pulled the wet saddles off the horses and hobbled them and walked off in separate directions through the chaparral to stand spraddle-legged, clutching their knees and vomiting. The browsing horses jerked their heads up. There was no sound they'd ever heard before. In the gray twilight, those retchings seemed to echo like the calls of some rude, provisional species loosed upon that waste. Something imperfect and malformed lodged in the heart of being, a thing smirking deep in the eyes of grace itself, like a gorgon in an autumn pool. In the morning they caught up the horses and saddled them and tied on the damp bedrolls and led the horses out to the road.
"What do you want to do?" said Rollins.
"I reckon we better go find his skinny ass."
"What if we just went on?"
John Grady mounted up and looked down at Rollins.
"I don't believe I can leave him out here afoot," he said.
Rollins nodded.
"Yeah," he said, "I guess not."
He rode down the arroyo and encountered Blevins coming up in the same condition in which he'd left him. He sat the horse. Blevins was picking his way barefoot along the wash, carrying one boot. He looked up at John Grady.
"Where's your clothes at?" said John Grady.
"Washed away.
Your horse is gone."
"I know it. I done been out to the road once."
"What do you aim to do?"
"I don't know."
"You don't look like the demon Rum's dealt kindly with you.
My head feels like a fat lady sat on it."
John Grady looked out at the morning desert shining in the new sun. He looked at the boy.
"You've wore Rawlins completely out. I reckon you know that."
"You never know when you'll be in need of them you've despised," said Blevins.
"Where the hell did you hear that at?"
"I don't know. I just decided to say it."
John Grady shook his head. He reached and unbuckled his saddlebag and took out his spare shirt and pitched it down to Blevins.
"Put that on before you get parboiled out here. I'll ride down and see if I can see your clothes anywheres."
"I appreciate it," said Blevins.
He rode down the wash and he rode back. Blevins was sitting in the sand in the shirt.
"How much water was in this wash last night?"
"A bunch."
"Where'd you find the one boot at?"
"In a tree."
He rode down the wash and out over the gravel fan and sat, looking. He didn't see any boot. When he came back, Blevins was sitting as he'd left him.
"That boot's gone," he said.
"I figured as much."
John Grady reached down a hand.
"Let's go."
He swung Blevins in his underwear up onto the horse behind him.
"Rawlins will pitch a pure hissy when he sees you," he said.
Rawlins, when he saw him, seemed too dismayed to speak.
"He's lost his clothes," said John Grady.
Rawlins turned his horse and set off slowly down the road. They followed. No one spoke. After a while, John Grady heard something drop into the road, and he looked back and saw Blevins' boot lying there. He turned and looked at Blevins, but Blevins was peering steadily ahead from under the brim of his hat, and they rode on. The horses stepped archly among the shadows that fell over the road. The bracken steamed. By and by they passed a stand of roadside choya, against which small birds had been driven by the storm and there impaled. Gray, nameless birds espaliered in attitudes of stillborn flight, or hanging loosely in their feathers. Some of them were still alive, and they twisted on their spines as the horses passed, and raised their heads and cried out, but the horsemen rode on. The sun rose up in the sky, and the country took on new color, green fire in the acacia and palo verde, and green in the roadside runoff grass and fire in the ocotillo, as if the rain were electric, had grounded circuits that the electric might be. So mounted, they rode at noon into a wax camp pitched in the broken footlands beneath the low stone mesa running east and west before them. There was a small clearwater branch here, and the Mexicans had dug an open firebox and lined it with rock and scotched their boiler into the bank over it. The boiler was made from the lower half of a galvanized water tank, and to bring it to this location, they'd run a wooden axle shaft through the bottom and made a wooden spider whereby to bed the axle in the open end, and with a team of horses rolled the tank across the desert from Zaragoza, 80 miles to the east. The track of flattened chaparral was still visible bending away over the floor of the desert. When the Americans rode into their camp, there were several burros standing there that had just been brought down from the mesa, loaded with the candelilla plant they boiled for wax, and the Mexicans had left the animals to stand while they ate their dinner. A dozen men, dressed most of them in what looked to be pajamas, and all of them in rags, squatting under the shade of some willows and eating with tin spoons off of clay plates. They looked up, but they did not stop eating.
"Buenos dias," said John Grady.
They responded in a quick, dull chorus. He dismounted, and they looked at the spot where he stood, and looked at each other, and then went on eating.
¿Tienen algo que comer?
One or two of them gestured toward the fire with their spoons. When Blevins slid from the horse, they looked at each other again. The riders got their plates and utensils out of the saddlebags, and John Grady got the little enameled pot out of the blackened cook bag and handed it to Blevins together with his old wooden-handled kitchen fork. They went to the fire and filled their plates with beans and chili and took each a couple of blackened corn tortillas from a piece of sheet iron laid over the fire,
and walked over and sat under the willows a little apart from the workers. Blevins sat with his bare legs stretched out before him, but they looked so white and exposed, lying there on the ground, that he seemed ashamed, and he tried to tuck them up under him and to cover his knees with the tails of the borrowed shirt he wore. They ate. The workers had, for the most part, finished their meal, and they were leaning back, smoking cigarettes and belching quietly. "You going to ask him about my horse?" said Blevins. John Grady chewed thoughtfully. "Well," he said, "if it's here, they ought to be able to figure out it belongs to us."
"You think they'd steal it?"
"You ain't never going to get that horse back," said Rollins. "We had a town down here somewheres. You better see if you can trade that pistol for some clothes and a bus ticket back to wherever it is you come from, if there are buses. Your buddy yonder might be willing to haul your ass all over Mexico, but I damn sure ain't."
"I ain't got the pistol," said Blevins. "It's with the horse."
"Shit," said Rollins. Blevins ate. After a while, he looked up. "What I ever do to you?" he said.
"You ain't done nothing to me, and you ain't going to. That's the point."
"Leave him be, Lacey. It ain't going to hurt us to try and help the boy get his horse back."
"I'm just telling him the facts," said Rollins.
"He knows the facts.
He don't act like it."
John Grady wiped his plate with the last of the tortilla and ate the tortilla and set the plate on the ground and commenced to roll a cigarette.
"I'm goddamn starved," said Rollins.
"You reckon they'd care if we went back for seconds?"
"They won't care," said Blevins. "Go ahead."
"Who asked you?" said Rollins. John Grady started to reach in his pocket for a match, and then he rose and walked over to the workers and squatted and asked for a light. Two of them produced esclarajos from their clothes, and one struck him a light, and he leaned and lit the cigarette and nodded. He asked about the boiler and the loads of candelilla still tied on the burros, and the workers told them about the wax, and one of them rose and walked off and came back with a small gray cake of it and handed it to him. It looked like a bar of laundry soap. He scraped it with his fingernail and sniffed it. He held it up and looked at it. "Que vale?" he said. They shrugged. "Es mucho trabajo," he said.
"Bastante."
A thin man in a stained leather vest with embroidery on the front was watching John Grady with narrowed and speculative eyes. John Grady handed back the wax, and this man hissed at him and jerked his head. John Grady turned.
"Es su hermano el rubio?"
He meant Blevins. John Grady shook his head. "No," he said.
"Quién es?" said the man.
He looked across the clearing. The cook had given Blevins some lard, and he sat rubbing it into his sunburned legs.
"Un muchacho, no más," he said. "Algún parentesco?"
"No.
Un amigo."
John Grady drew on the cigarette and tapped the ash against the heel of his boot.
"Nada,"
he said. No one spoke. The man in the vest studied John Grady, and he looked across the clearing at Blevins. Then he asked John Grady if he wished to sell the boy. He didn't answer for a moment. The man may have thought he was weighing the matter. They waited. He looked up. "No," he said.
"Que vale?"
said the man. John Grady stubbed out the cigarette against the sole of his boot and rose.
"Gracias por su hospitalidad," he said.
The man offered that he would trade for him in wax. The others had turned to listen to him. Now they turned and looked at John Grady. John Grady studied them. They did not look evil, but it was no comfort to him. He turned and crossed the clearing toward the standing horses. Blevins and Rollins rose.
"What did they say?"
said Blevins.
"Nothing."
"Did you ask them about my horse?"
"No."
"Why not? They don't have your horse."
"What was that guy talking about?"
"Nothing. Get the plates. Let's go." Rollins looked across the clearing at the seated men. He took up the trailing reins and swung up into the saddle.
"What's happened, bud?"
he said. John Grady mounted and turned the horse. He looked back at the men and he looked at Blevins. Blevins stood with the plates.
"What was he looking at me for?"
he said. "Put them in the bag and get your ass up here."
"They ain't washed."
"Do like I told you." Some of the men had risen. Blevins stuffed the plates into the bag, and John Grady reached down and swung him up onto the horse behind him. He pulled the horse around, and they rode out of the camp and into the road south. Rawlins looked back and put his horse into a trot, and John Grady came up, and they rode side by side down the narrow, rutted track. No one spoke. When they were clear of the camp a mile or so, Blevins asked what it was that the man in the vest had wanted, but John Grady didn't answer. When Blevins asked again, Rawlins looked back at him. "He wanted to buy you," he said. "That's what he wanted." John Grady didn't look at Blevins. They rode on in silence. "What did you go and tell him that for?" said John Grady. "There wasn't no call to do that." They camped that night in the low range of hills under the Sierra de la Encantada, and the three of them sat about the fire in silence. The boy's bony legs were pale in the firelight and coated with road dust and bits of chaff that had stuck to the lard. The drawers he wore were baggy and dirty, and he did indeed look like some sad and ill-used serf, or worse. John Grady parceled out to him the bottom blanket from his bedroll, and he wrapped himself in it and lay by the fire and was soon asleep. Rawlins shook his head and spat. "God damn pitiful," he said. "You thought any more about what I said?" "Yeah," said John Grady, "I thought about it." Rawlins stared long into the red heart of the fire. "I'll tell you something," he said. "Tell me. Something bad is going to happen." John Grady smoked slowly, his arms around his updrawn knees. "This is just a jackpot," said Rawlins, "what this is." At noon the next day, they rode into the pueblo of Encantada at the foot of the low range of pollarded mountains they'd been skirting, and the first thing they saw was Blevins' pistol, sticking out of the back pocket of a man bent over into the engine compartment of a Dodge car. John Grady saw it first, and he could have named things he'd rather have seen. "Yonder's my goddamn pistol!" sang out Blevins. John Grady reached behind and grabbed him by the shirt, or he'd have slid down from the horse. "Hold on, idiot," he said. "Hold on, hell," said Blevins. "What do you think you're going to do?" Rawlins had put his horse alongside of him. "Keep riding," he hissed. "Good God almighty." Some children were watching from a doorway, and Blevins was looking back over his shoulder. "If that horse is here," said Rawlins, "they won't have to send for Dick Tracy to figure out who it belongs to." "What do you want to do?" "I don't know. Get off the damn street. Maybe too late anyways. I say we stash him in a safe place somewheres till we can look around."
"Does that suit you, Blevins?"
"It don't make a damn if it suits him or not," said Rawlins. "He don't have a say in it. Not if he wants my help, he don't." He rode past them, and they turned off down a clay gully that passed for a street. "Quit looking back, damn it," said John Grady. They left him with a canteen of water in the shade of some cottonwoods and told him to stay out of sight, and then they rode slowly back through the town. They were picking their way along one of those rutted gullies of which the town was composed when they saw the horse looking out of the sashless window of an abandoned mud house. "Keep riding," said Rawlins. John Grady nodded. When they got back to the cottonwoods, Blevins was gone. Rawlins sat looking over the barren, dusty countryside. He reached in his pocket for his tobacco.
"I'm going to tell you something, cousin."
John Grady leaned and spat.
"All right. Every dumb thing I ever done in my life, there was a decision I made before that got me into it. It was never the dumb thing. It was always some choice I made before it. You understand what I'm saying?"
"Yeah, I don't think so."
"Meaning what?"
"Meaning this is it. This is our last chance. Right now. This is the time, and there won't be another time, and I guarantee it."
"Meaning just leaving?"
"Yes, sir."
"What if it was you? It ain't me."
"What if it was?" Rawlins twisted the cigarette into the corner of his mouth and plucked a match from his pocket and popped it alight with his thumbnail. He looked at John Grady.
"I wouldn't leave you and you wouldn't leave me. That ain't no argument."
"You realize the fix he's in?"
"Yeah, I realize it. It's the one he put himself in."
They sat. Rawlins smoked. John Grady crossed his hands on the pommel of his saddle and sat looking at them. After a while, he raised his head.
"I can't do it," he said.
"Okay."
"What does that mean?"
"It means okay. If you can't, you can't. I think I knew what you'd say anyways."
"Well, I didn't."
They unsaddled and staked out the horses and lay in the dry leaves under the cottonwoods, and after a while they slept. When they woke, it was almost dark. The boy was squatting there watching them.
"It's a good thing I ain't a rogue," he said. "I could have slipped up on you all and carried off everything you own."
Rawlins turned and looked at him from under his hat and turned back. John Grady sat up.
"What did you all find out?" said Blevins.
"Your horse is here."
"Did you see him?"
"Yeah."
"What about the saddle?"
"We didn't see no saddle."
"I ain't leaving here till I get all my stuff."
"Here you go," said Rawlins. "Listen at that."
"What's he say?" said Blevins.
"Never mind," said John Grady.
"If it was his stuff, it'd be different, I bet. Then he'd be forgetting it back, wouldn't he?"
"Don't egg it on."
"Listen, shit for brains," said Rawlins. "If it wasn't for this man, I wouldn't be here at all. I'd have left your ass back up in that arroyo. No, I take that back. I'd have left you up on the Pecos."
"We'll try and get your horse back," said John Grady. "If that won't satisfy you, then you let me know right now." Blevins stared at the ground.
"He don't give a shit," said Rawlins. "I could have rode it down. Get shot dead for horse stealing, it don't mean a damn thing to him. He expects it."
"It ain't stealing," said Blevins.
"It's my horse. A lot of ice, that'll cut. You tell this man what you intend to do, because I guarantee you I don't give a big rat's ass."
"All right," said Blevins. John Grady studied him. "We get you your horse, you'll be ready to ride."
"Yeah. We got your word on that?"
"Words, ass," said Rawlins.
"Yeah,"
said Blevins. John Grady looked at Rawlins. Rawlins lay under his hat. He turned back to Blevins. "All right," he said. He got up and got his bedroll and came back and handed Blevins a blanket.
"We going to sleep now?" said Blevins.
"I am."
"Did you all eat?"
"Yeah," said Rawlins. "Sure we ate. Wouldn't you have? We eat a big steak apiece and split a third one."
"Damn," said Blevins. They slept until the moon was down, and they sat in the dark and smoked. John Grady watched the stars.
"What time you make it to be, bud?" said Rawlins.
"First quarter moon sets at midnight where I come from." Rawlins smoked.
"Hell, I believe I'll go back to bed."
"Go ahead, I'll wake you."
"All right."
Blevins went to sleep as well. He sat watching the firmament unscroll up from behind the blackened palisades of the mountains to the east. Toward the village all was darkness. Not even a dog barked. He looked at Rawlins rolled asleep in his sugan, and he knew that he was right in all he'd said, and there was no help for it. And the Dipper standing at the northern edge of the world turned, and the night was a long time passing. When he called them out, it was not much more than an hour till daylight.
"You ready?"
said Rawlins.
"Ready as I'm liable to get."
They saddled the horses, and John Grady handed his stake rope to Blevins.
"You can make a hack more out of that," he said.
"All right. Keep it under your shirt," said Rawlins. "Don't let nobody see it."
"There ain't nobody to see it," said Blevins.
"Don't bet on it. I see a light up yonder already."
"Let's go," said John Grady.
There were no house lamps lit in the street where they'd seen the horse. They rode along slowly. A dog that had been sleeping in the dirt rose up and commenced barking, and Rawlins made a throwing motion at it, and it slunk off. When they got to the house where the horse was stabled, John Grady got down and walked over and looked in the window and came back.
"He ain't here," he said.
It was dead quiet in the little mud street. Rawlins leaned and spat.
"Well, shit," he said.
"You all sure this is the place?"
said Blevins.
"It's the place."
The boy slid from the horse and picked his way gingerly with his bare feet across the road to the house and looked in. Then he climbed through the window.
"What the hell's he doing?"
said Rawlins.
"He got me."
They waited. He didn't come back.
"Yonder comes somebody."
Some dogs started up. John Grady mounted up and turned the horse and went back up the road and sat the horse in the dark. Rawlins followed. Dogs were beginning to bark all back through the town. A light came on.
"This is by God it, ain't it?"
said Rawlins. John Grady looked at him. He was sitting with the carbine upright on his thigh. From beyond the buildings and the din of dogs there came a shout.
"You know what these sons of bitches will do to us," said Rawlins. "You thought about that?"
John Grady leaned forward and spoke to the horse and put his hand on the horse's shoulder. The horse had begun to step nervously, and it was not a nervous horse. He looked toward the houses where they'd seen the light. A horse whinnied in the dark.
"That crazy son of a bitch," said Rollins. "That crazy son of a bitch."
All-out bedlam had broken across the lot. Rollins pulled his horse around, and the horse stamped and trotted, and he whacked it across the rump with the barrel of the gun. The horse squatted and dug in with its hind hooves, and Blevins, in his underwear, atop the big bay horse, and attended by a close retinue of howling dogs, exploded into the road in a shower of debris from the rotted Ocotillo fence he put the horse through. The horse skittered past Rollins sideways, Blevins clinging to the animal's mane and snatching at his hat. The dogs swarmed wildly over the road, and Rollins' horse stood and twisted and shook its head, and the big bay turned a complete circle, and there were three pistol shots from somewhere in the dark, all evenly spaced, that went pop, pop, pop. John Grady put the heels of his boots to his horse and leaned low in the saddle, and he and Rollins went pounding up the road. Blevins passed them both, his pale knees clutching the horse and his shirt tail flying. Before they reached the turn at the top of the hill, there were three more shots from the road behind them. They turned onto the main track south and went pounding through the town. Already there were lamps lit in a few small windows. They passed through at a hard gallop and rode up into the low hills. First light was shaping out the country to the east. A mile south of the town, they caught up with Blevins. He turned his horse in the road, and he was watching them and watching the road behind them. "Hold up," he said. "Let's listen." They tried to quiet the gasping animals.
"You son of a bitch," said Rollins.
Blevins didn't answer. He slid from his horse and lay in the road, listening. Then he got up and pulled himself back up onto the horse.
"Boys," he said, "they're coming."
"Horses?"
"Yeah. I'll tell you right now, straight out, there ain't no way you all can keep up with me. Let me take the road, since it's me they're hunting. They'll follow the dust, and you all can slip off into the country. I'll see you down the road."
Before they could agree or disagree, he'd hauled the horse around by the hackamore and was pounding off up the track.
"He's right," said John Grady. "We better get off this damn road."
"All right." They rode out through the brush in the dark, taking the lowest country they could keep to, lying along the necks of their mounts that they not be skylighted.
"We're fixing to get the horse's snake bit, sure as a world," said Rollins.
"It'll be daylight soon."
"Well, then we can get shot."
In a little while, they heard horses on the road. Then they heard more horses. Then all was quiet.
"We better get somewheres," said Rollins. "It's fixing to get daylight, sure enough."
"Yeah, I know it."
"You think when they come back, they'll see where we quit the road?"
"Not if enough of them has rode over it."
"What if they catch him?"
John Grady didn't answer.
"He wouldn't have no qualms about showing them which way we'd headed."
"Probably not."
"You know not. All they'd have to do would be look at him crossways."
"Then we better keep riding."
"Well, I don't know about you, but I'm about to run out of horse."
"Well, tell me what you want to do."
"Shit,"
said Rollins.
"We ain't got no choice. We'll see what daylight brings. Maybe one of these days we might find some grain somewheres in this country."
"Maybe."
They slowed the horses and rode to the crest of the ridge. Nothing moved in all that gray landscape. They dismounted and walked out along the ridge. Small birds were beginning to call from the chaparral.
"You know how long it's been since we eat?" said Rollins.
"I ain't even thought about it."
"I ain't either till just now. Being shot at will sure enough cause you to lose your appetite, won't it?"
"Hold up a minute."
"What is it?"
"Hold up."
They stood listening.
"I don't hear nothing."
"There's riders out there."
"On the road?"
"I don't know."
"Can you see anything?"
"No."
"Let's keep moving."
John Grady spat and stood listening. Then they moved on. At daylight, they left the horses standing in a gravel wash and climbed to the top of a rise and sat among the Ocotillos and watched the country back to the northeast. Some deer moved out, feeding along the ridge opposite. Other than that, they saw nothing.
"Can you see the road?" said Rollins.
"No."
They sat. Rollins stood the rifle against his knee and took his tobacco from his pocket.
"I believe I'll smoke," he said.
A long fan of light ran out from the east, and the rising sun swelled blood red along the horizon.
Look yonder, said John Grady.
What?
Over yonder. 2 miles away, riders had crested a rise. One, two, a third. Then they dropped from sight again. Which way they headed?
Well, cousin, I don't know for sure, but I got a pretty good notion.
Rawlins sat holding the cigarette.
We're going to die in this goddamn country, he said.
No, we ain't.
You think they can track us on this ground?
I don't know. I don't know that they can't.
I'll tell you what, bud. They get us bait up out here somewheres with the horses give out, and they're going to have to come over the barrel of this rifle.
John Grady looked at him, and he looked back out where the riders had been.
I'd hate to have to shoot my way back to Texas, he said.
Where's your gun at?
In the saddlebag.
Rawlins lit the cigarette.
I ever see that little son of a bitch again, I'll kill him myself. I'm damned if I won't.
Let's go, said John Grady.
They still got a lot of ground to cover. I'd rather to make a good run as a bad stand.
They rode out west with the sun at their back, and their shadows, horse and rider, falling before them tall as trees. The country they found themselves in was old lava country, and they kept to the edge of the rolling black gravel plain and kept watch behind them. They saw the riders again, south of where they would have put them, and then once more.
If them horses ain't bottomed out, I believe they'd be coming harder than that, said Rawlins.
I do too. Mid-morning they rode to the crest of a low volcanic ridge and turned the horses and sat watching.
What do you think? Said Rawlins.
Well, they know we ain't got the horse, that's for sure. They might not be as anxious to ride this ground as you and me.
You got that right.
They sat for a long time. Nothing moved.
I think they've quit us.
I do too. Let's keep moving. By late afternoon, the horses were stumbling. They watered them out of their hats and drank the other canteen dry themselves and mounted again and rode on. They saw the riders no more. Toward evening, they came upon a band of sheepherders camped on the far side of a deep arroyo that was floored with round white rocks. The sheepherders seemed to have selected the site with an eye to its defense, as did the ancients of that country, and they watched with great solemnity the riders making their way along the other side.
What do you think? Said John Grady.
I think we ought to keep riding. I'm kindly soured on the citizens in this part of the country.
I think you're right. They rode on another mile and descended into the arroyo to look for water. They found none. They dismounted and led the horses, the four of them stumbling along into the deepening darkness, Rawlins still carrying the rifle, following the senseless track of birds or wild pigs in the sand. Nightfall found them sitting on their blankets on the ground with the horses staked a few feet away, just sitting in the dark with no fire, not speaking. After a while, Rawlins said, "We should have got water from them herders. We'll find some water in the morning."
"I wish it was morning."
John Grady didn't answer.
"Goddamn Junior's gonna piss and moan and carry on all night. I know how he gets."
"They probably think we've gone crazy."
"Ain't we?
You think they caught him?"
"I don't know."
"I'm going to turn in." They lay in their blankets on the ground. The horses shifted uneasily in the dark.
"I'll say one thing about him," said Rawlins.
"Who?"
"Blevins."
"What's that?"
"The little son of a bitch wouldn't stand still for nobody hijacking his horse."
In the morning, they left the horses in the arroyo and climbed up to watch the sun rise and see what the country afforded. It had been cold in the night in the sink, and when the sun came up, they turned and sat with their backs to it. To the north, a thin spire of smoke stood in the windless air.
"You reckon that's the sheep camp?" said Rawlins.
"We better hope it is."
"You want to ride back up there and see if they'll give us some water and some grub?"
"No."
"I don't either."
They watched the country. Rawlins rose and walked off with the rifle. After a while he came back with some nopal fruit in his hat and poured them out on a flat rock and sat peeling them with his knife.
"You want some of these?"
he said. John Grady walked over and squatted and got out his own knife. The nopal was still cool from the night, and it stained their fingers blood red.
and they sat peeling the fruit and eating it and spitting the small hard seeds and picking the spines out of their fingers. Rawlins gestured at the countryside. "There ain't much happening out there, is there?" John Grady nodded. "Biggest problem we got is we could run into them people and not even know it. We never even got a good look at their horses." Rawlins spat. "They got the same problem. They don't know us neither." "They'd know us." "Yeah," said Rawlins, "you got a point. Of course, we ain't got no problem at all next to Blevins. He'd about as well to paint that horse red and go around blowing a horn. Ain't that the truth?" Rawlins wiped the blade of his knife on his trousers and folded it shut. "I believe I'm losing ground with these things. Peculiar thing is, what he says is true. It is his horse." "Well, it's somebody's horse. But damn sure don't belong to them Mexicans." "Yeah, well, he's got no way to prove it." Rawlins put the knife in his pocket and sat inspecting his hat for nopal stickers. "A good-looking horse is like a good-looking woman," he said. "They're always more trouble than what they're worth. What a man needs is just one that'll get the job done." "Where'd you hear that at?" "I don't know." John Grady folded away his knife. "Well," he said, "there's a lot of country out there." "Yep, a lot of country. God knows where he's got to." Rawlins nodded. "I'll tell you what you told me."
"What's that?"
"We ain't seen the last of his skinny ass." They rode all day upon the broad plain to the south. It was noon before they found water, a silty residue in the floor of an adobe tank. In the evening, passing through a saddle in the low hills, they jumped a spikehorn buck out of a stand of juniper, and Rawlins shucked the rifle backward out of the bootleg scabbard and raised and cocked it and fired. He let go the reins, and the horse bowed up and hopped sideways and stood, trembling, and he stepped down and ran to the spot where he'd seen the little buck, and it lay dead in its blood on the ground. John Grady rode up leading Rawlins' horse. The buck was shot through the base of the skull, and its eyes were just glazing. Rawlins ejected the spent shell and levered in a fresh round and lowered the hammer with his thumb and looked up.
"That was a hell of a shot," said John Grady.
"That was blind dumbass luck is what that was. I just raised up and shot."
"Still a hell of a shot."
"Let me have your belt knife. If we don't founder on deer meat, I'm a Chinaman."
They dressed out the deer and hung it in the junipers to cool, and they made a foray on the slope for wood. They built a fire, and they cut Palo Verde poles and cut forked uprights to lay them in, and Rawlins skinned the buck out and sliced the meat in strips and draped it over the poles to smoke. When the fire had burned down, he skewered the backstraps on two greenwood sticks and propped the sticks with rocks over the coals. Then they sat watching the meat brown and sniff the smoke where fat dropped hissing in the coals. John Grady walked out and unsaddled the horses and hobbled them and turned them out and came back with his blanket and saddle.
"Here you go," he said.
"What's that?"
"Salt."
"I wish we had some bread."
"How about some fresh corn and potatoes and apple cobbler?"
"Don't be an ass."
"Ain't them things done yet?"
"No, set down. They won't ever get done with you standing there that away."
They ate the tenderloins, one apiece, and turned the strips of meat on the poles and lay back and rolled cigarettes.
"I've seen them vaqueros worked for Blair cut a yearling heifer so thin you could see through the meat. They'd bone one out damn near in one long sheet, and hang the meat on poles all the way around the fire like laundry. And if you come up on it at night, you wouldn't know what it was. It was like looking through something and seeing its heart. They'd turn the meat and mend the fire in the night. You'd see him moving around inside it. You'd wake up in the night, and this thing would be setting out there on the prairie in the wind, and it would be glowing like a hot stove, just red as blood."
"This here meat's going to taste like cedar," said John Grady.
"I know it."
Coyotes were yapping along the ridge to the south. Rawlins leaned and tipped the ash from his cigarette into the fire and leaned back.
"You ever think about dying?"
"Yeah, some." "You?"
"Yeah, some." You think there's a heaven?
Yeah, don't you?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe. You think you can believe in heaven if you don't believe in hell?
I guess you can believe in what you want to. Rollins nodded.
You think about all this stuff that can happen to you, he said. There ain't no end to it.
You fixing to get religion on us?
No. Just sometimes I wonder if I wouldn't be better off if I did.
You ain't fixing to quit on me, are you?
I said I wouldn't.
John Grady nodded.
You think them guts might draw a line? Said Rollins.
Could.
You ever seen one?
No. You?
Just that one dead that Julius Ramsey killed with the dogs up on Grape Creek. He climbed up the tree and knocked it out with a stick for the dogs to fight.
You think he really done that?
Yeah, I think probably he did.
John Grady nodded.
He might well could have. The coyotes yammered and ceased and then began again. You think God looks out for people? Said Rollins.
Well, I guess he does. You?
Yeah, I do. Way the world is. Somebody can wake up and sneeze somewhere in Arkansas or some damn place, and before you're done, there's wars and ruination and all hell. You don't know what's going to happen. I'd say he's just about got to. I don't believe we'd make it a day otherwise.
John Grady nodded.
You don't think them sons of bitches might have caught him, do you?
Blevins?
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought you was glad to get shut of him.
I don't want to see nothing bad happen to him.
I don't either.
You reckon his name is Jimmy Blevins, sure enough?
Who knows?
In the night, the coyotes woke them, and they lay in the dark and listened to them where they convened over the carcass of the deer, fighting and squalling like cats.
I want you to listen to that damn racket, said Rollins.
He got up and got a stick from the fire and shouted at them and threw the stick. They hushed. He mended the fire and turned the meat on the green wood racks. By the time he was back in his blankets, they were at it again. They rode all day, the day following, through the hill country to the west. As they rode, they cut strips of the smoked and half-dried deer meat and chewed on it, and their hands were black and greasy, and they wiped them on the withers of the horses and passed the canteen of water back and forth between them and admired the country. There were storms to the south and masses of clouds that moved slowly along the horizon with their long, dark tendrils trailing in the rain. That night they camped on a ledge of rock above the plains and watched the lightning all along the horizon provoke from the seamless dark of the distant mountain ranges again and again. Crossing the plain the next morning, they came upon standing water in the Bajadas, and they watered the horses and drank rainwater from the rocks, and they climbed steadily into the deepening cool of the mountains, until in the evening of that day, from the crest of the Cordilleras, they saw below them the country of which they'd been told. The grasslands lay in a deep violet haze, and to the west thin flights of waterfowl were moving north before the sunset in the deep red galleries under the cloud banks, like school fish in a burning sea. And on the foreland plain they saw vaqueros driving cattle before them through a gauze of golden dust. They made camp on the south slope of the mountain and spread their blankets in the dry dirt under an overhanging ledge of rock. Rollins took horse and rope and dragged up before their camp an entire dead tree, and they built a great bonfire against the cold. Out on the plain in the shoreless night, they could see, like a reflection of their own fire in a dark lake, the fire of the vaqueros 5 miles away. It rained in the night, and the rain hissed in the fire, and the horses came in out of the darkness and stood with their red eyes shifting and blinking, and in the morning it was cold and gray, and the sun a long time coming. By noon they were on the plain, riding through grass of a kind they'd not seen before. The path of the driven cattle lay through the grass like a place where water had run, and by mid-afternoon they could see the herd before them moving west, and within an hour they'd caught them up. The vaqueros knew them by the way they sat their horses, and they called them caballero,
and exchanged smoking material with them and told them about the country. They drove the cattle on to the west, fording creeks and a small river, and driving pockets of antelope and white-tailed deer before them out of the stands of enormous cottonwoods through which they passed, and they moved on until late in the day, when they came to a fence and began to drift the cattle south. There was a road on the other side of the fence, and in the road were the tracks of tires and the tracks of horses from the recent rains, and a young girl came riding down the road and passed them, and they ceased talking. She wore English riding boots and jodhpurs and a blue twill hacking jacket, and she carried a riding crop, and the horse she rode was a black Arabian saddle horse. She had been riding the horse in the river or in the cienegas because the horse was wet to its belly, and the leather fenders of the saddle were dark at their lower edges, and her boots as well. She wore a flat-crowned hat of black felt with a wide brim, and her black hair was loose under it and fell halfway to her waist. And as she rode past, she turned and smiled and touched the brim of the hat with her crop, and the vaqueros touched their hat brims one by one down to the last of those who'd pretended not even to see her as she passed. Then she pushed the horse into a gated rack and disappeared down the road. Rawlins looked at the caporal of the vaqueros, but the caporal put his horse forward and rode up the line. Rawlins fell back among the riders and alongside John Grady. "Did you see that little darling?" he said. John Grady didn't answer. He was still looking down the road where she'd gone. There was nothing there to see, but he was looking anyway. An hour later, in the failing light, they were helping the vaqueros drive the cattle into a holding pen. The gerente had ridden up from the house, and he sat his horse and picked his teeth and watched the work without comment. When they were done, the caporal and another vaquero took them over and introduced them, namelessly, and the five of them rode together back down to the gerente's house, and there in the kitchen at a metal table under a bare light bulb, the gerente questioned them closely as to their understanding of ranch work, while the caporal seconded their every claim, and the vaquero nodded and said that it was so, and the caporal volunteered testimony on his own concerning the qualifications of the gueros, of which they themselves were not even aware, dismissing doubt with a sweep of his hand, as if to say that these were things known to everyone. The gerente leaned back in his chair and studied them. In the end they gave their names and spelled them, and the gerente put them in his book, and then they rose and shook hands and walked out in the early darkness, where the moon was rising and the cattle were calling, and the yellow squares of window light gave warmth and shape to an alien world. They unsaddled the horses and turned them into the trap and followed the caporal up to the bunkhouse, a long adobe building of two rooms with a tin roof and concrete floors. In one room a dozen bunks of wood or metal, a small sheet-iron stove. In the other room a long table with benches for seats and a wood-burning cook stove. An old wooden safe that held glasses and tinware. A soapstone sink with a zinc-covered sideboard. The men were already at the table eating when they entered, and they went to the sideboard and got cups and plates and stood at the stove and helped themselves to beans and tortillas and a rich stew made from kid, and then went to the table where the vaqueros nodded to them and made expansive gestures for them to be seated, eating the while with one hand. After dinner they sat at the table and smoked and drank coffee, and the vaqueros asked them many questions about America, and all the questions were about horses and cattle, and none about them. Some had friends or relatives who had been there, but to most the country to the north was little more than a rumor, a thing for which there seemed no accounting. Someone brought a coal oil lamp to the table and lit it, and shortly thereafter the generator shut down, and the light bulbs hanging by their cords from the ceiling dimmed to a thin orange wire and winked out. They listened with great attention as John Grady answered their questions, and they nodded solemnly, and they were careful of their demeanor that they not be thought to have opinions on what they heard, for like most men skilled at their work, they were scornful of any least suggestion of knowing anything not learned at first hand. They carried their dishes to a galvanized tub full of water and soap curd, and they carried the lamp to their bunks at the farther end of the bunkhouse and unrolled the ticks down over the rusty springs, and spread their blankets and undressed and blew out the lamp. Tired as they were, they lay a long time in the dark after the vaqueros were asleep. They could hear them breathing deeply in the room that smelled of horses and leather and men, and they could hear in the distance the new cattle still not bedded down in the